Hallo ihr Lieben, bevor es mit der Folge losgeht, ganz rasch eine Bitte in eigener Sache. Es ist Award Season, das heißt, es werden fleißig Preise vergeben und wir bei Weltwach, wir sind noch ganz begeistert und beseelt und dankbar, weil wir kürzlich für unsere Reisereportagefolgen, zum Beispiel zu Tansania, Irland und Niedersachsen, auf der ITB 2024 mit dem Columbus Radiopreis in der Kategorie Bester Podcast ausgezeichnet wurden. Und jetzt gibt es schon wieder die nächste Chance, einen Preis einzusammeln und die würden wir natürlich gern nutzen. Aber dazu brauchen wir euch, denn ihr könnt für uns abstimmen und zwar beim Deutschen Podcastpreis in der Kategorie Unterhaltung. Einfach Deutscher Podcastpreis und Unterhaltung googeln und dort für uns abstimmen. Oder auch in unseren Linktree in der Showbeschreibung schauen. Auch dort haben wir den Link für euch hinterlegt. Das geht innerhalb weniger Sekunden und wir wüssten eure Stimme wirklich sehr zu schätzen. Ganz lieben Dank und los geht's mit der Folge. Willkommen in einer Gegend, deren Name für mich nach einer riesigen, ungezähmten und wunderschönen Wildnis klingt. Einer Wildnis, die mitunter als eines der letzten wahren Wildnisgebiete der Erde bezeichnet wird. Es ist eine Gegend, in der sich mächtige Flüsse tief in verschlungene Schluchten gegraben haben und sich schließlich in ausgedehnte Feuchtgebiete ergießen.
We're an area of just over 424,000 square kilometers. So approximately, we're very similar size to Germany.
Wow.
But instead of 90 million people, we've got about 45,000 people in that same area. So it's one of the least densely populated areas on the planet. It's 1,000 kilometers from our place to the beach. And there's two towns in between. They're both indigenous towns of only a couple thousand people at most.
Also, es geht um eine Gegend etwa von der Größe Deutschlands mit gerade einmal 45.000 Einwohnern. Es geht um die Region Kimberley. Von Kununurra, dem östlichen Tor in diese Region, sind es etwa 1.000 Kilometer bis zum westlichen Tor in die Kimberleys, der Stadt Broome. Dazwischen gibt es nur eine einzige asphaltierte Straße. Außerdem verläuft hier die Gibb River Road, eine Schotterpiste, die mitten durchs Herz der Kimberleys führt. Ich erinnere mich an die alten Dokumentationen von Malcolm Douglas, die ich als Kind immer auf Kabel 1 geschaut hatte. Einem kernigen, weißbärtigen und super sympathischen australischen Tierfilmer, Abenteurer und Krokodilexperten, der von den 60ern bis in die 2000er hinein fantastische Dokus drehte über das australische Outback. Insbesondere auch über die Kimberley-Region. Besonders gefallen hat mir an ihm immer, dass er sowohl die Natur als auch die Aboriginal Peoples mit tiefem Respekt behandelte. Er wird gleich kurz nochmal relevant werden. Wenn ich an meine eigene Australienzeit zurückdenke, dann erinnere ich mich besonders gerne an einen anderen älteren Herrn, nämlich den Farmer Mike, dem ich in meinem Weltwachbuch auch ein ganzes Kapitel gewidmet habe und der ein unwahrscheinlicher Kandidat dafür war, einer meiner besten Freunde zu werden. Und ich denke definitiv auch an Westaustralien zurück, mit seinen weitläufigen grünen Weinbergen und Weingütern im Süden, den uralten Aboriginal-Städten, dem glasklaren Meerwasser und den wirklich unendlichen roten erdigen Weiten. Durch diese Weiten habe ich mich damals von Süden nach Norden hochgearbeitet, bin also Stunde um Stunde und Tag für Tag auf den endlosen Highways unterwegs gewesen, flankiert von fernen Horizonten. Alle paar Stunden kam mal eine Tankstelle oder ein kleines Küstennest, in dem man rasten und in dessen lauwarmen Meerwasser man natürlich dann auch schnorcheln konnte. Shark Bay, Coral Bay, die Strände um Exmouth mit dem Ningaloo Reef, dem größten nach Westen gelagerten Riff der Welt, anders als das nur nebenbei bemerkt, anders als das Great Barrier Reef, das man nach einer ja zum Teil mehrstündigen Bootstour erst erreicht, erstreckt sich dieses Riff direkt an der Küste entlang und man läuft also wirklich vom Strand ins Meer, hält den Kopf unter Wasser und schon geht's los. Schildkröten, kleine Stachelrochen, Fische, Korallen und so weiter. Ja, und dann weiter im Norden der Carrigini National Park mit seinen uralten geologischen Formationen, dann die schroffen Minenstädte des Hinterlandes, einsame Zeltnächte auf roter Erde, irgendwo im Nirgendwo. Also, wenn ich Westaustralien höre, dann durchflut mich wirklich die Erinnerung und ich könnte stundenlang vor mich hinbrabbeln. Das mache ich jetzt aber natürlich nicht. Ich muss allerdings auch ehrlich zugeben, dass ich es leider nie bis in die Kimberley-Region geschafft habe, bisher zumindest. Und so hatte ich bisher auch keine echte Vorstellung davon, wie riesig die Kimberleys wirklich sind. Hier in den Kimberleys ist Scotty Connell zu Hause. Für ihn ist das Erkunden und Begreifen der Kimberleys eine Lebensaufgabe.
It's a lifetime. It's a lifetime. I've done more than anyone I've ever met and anyone out on the country. And when I say I've done more, I've explored more, I've experienced more than anyone that I've met or come into contact with. I've also read through a lot of stuff over the years because when I go to a particular spot, I'm like, who else has been here? I want to know. And in generalizing the whole Kimberley, one of the main things is the Kimberley is so huge. It's 1,000 kilometers across. And then the coastline is so massive as well that it really is a lifetime.
Ein kleinen Einblick darin, wie er sich dieser Lebensaufgabe widmet, schenkt er uns in dieser Episode. Außerdem hören wir gleich noch von Gene Hardy, der von Margaret River erzählt, von seinen Wurzeln dort und auch von seiner Surfleidenschaft. Aber erst einmal gibt es jetzt endlich das Intro.
Grenzgänger und leidenschaftliche Weltenwanderer nehmen uns mit auf ihre Streifzüge und bieten Einblicke in ferne Orte und faszinierende Kulturen. Mit offenen Augen ins Abenteuer. Das ist der Weltwach-Podcast mit Erik Lorenz.
Scotty Cornell ist ein Abenteurer und Entdecker aus Leidenschaft. Er hat mit den nepalesischen Gurkhas, also Soldaten, militärische Schulungen in der Kimberley-Region durchgeführt und er wandert in der unwirtlichen Regenzeit regelmäßig los mit wenig mehr als einem Rucksack auf dem Rücken und einem Kumpel zur Seite und wandert dann einfach in den Busch, weil er dort gern ist, weil er sich dort glücklich und geborgen fühlt. Mit den Jahren des Erkundens hat er die Kimberleys auf diese Weise außerordentlich gut kennengelernt und er hofft, ihre Wildnis und die hiesigen Kulturen mit den Prinzipien des nachhaltigen Tourismus auch zu erhalten. Beispiele dafür, wie er sich für den Tourismus in der Kimberley-Region einsetzt, gibt es viele. Er hat zum Beispiel das Buch 100 Things to See in the Kimberley geschrieben. Er betreibt seinen eigenen Podcast, der heißt Bush Yarns, und er wurde für seine Arbeit als Guide bei den Western Australia Tourism Awards ausgezeichnet mit dem prestigeträchtigen Facet Golden Guide Award. Eines wird, wenn man sich mit seiner Arbeit beschäftigt oder auch mit ihm spricht, jedenfalls ziemlich schnell klar. Er liebt den Ort, an dem er heute lebt.
It's such a beautiful, beautiful place to live. And it's harsh in its months and it's just postcard perfect in other months. And the things that change from the dry season to the wet season and all of that is one element of it, and it's really just beautiful waking up with the birds every day and just that fresh air and you know, our closest city being Perth, in the state of Western Australia, is nearly 3,500 kilometers away, and there's one road to get there, and that's the longest highway in Australia. It's the Great Northern Highway that gets you there, but that's a long way from the city, you know.
Dabei ist Scotty jedoch nicht in den östlichen Kimberleys aufgewachsen, wo er heute lebt, sondern im erwähnten westlichen Tor in die Kimberleys in der Stadt Broome.
People often see the Kimberley or Kimberley as a mountain range and they're going to explore this, but Broome is that as well. Broome's got the desert meeting the sea. It's got so many unique things that set it apart from every other town in Australia. You know, we've got dinosaur footprints all along the beach. You know, we've got some of the highest tropical tides in the world. We've got this beautiful culture of pearling industry. And then you've got, you know, the Japanese, Filipino, Malay, Thai, Indonesian, all these different people that have called Broome home over the years, that culture is actually integrated with our local Aboriginal culture. So a lot of my friends have a Japanese grandfather and an Aboriginal grandmother or stuff like that.
Aber so toll fand er Broome nicht immer. Als er dort aufwuchs, war das Leben dort für ihn nicht immer leicht. Er sagt, für ihn sei es damals eine taffe Stadt gewesen. Und viele seiner Freunde starben früh oder landeten in Gefängnissen. Aber er liebte den Ozean. So given the fact that you grew up at the beach in Broome, what was it that sparked your passion for exploring the wild in general and this particular part of the Kimberley that you live in today in particular?
For me, I was always in the water. Mm. It was always about the water. We finished school in Broome at 2:00 or 2:10, and we had the entire afternoon as kids just to explore, and we were always in the ocean. It was just the heart of everything we did. It was so to leave that and go to the freshwater 1,000 km east away from the beach wasn't something I ever thought I would do. I live behind Malcolm Douglas, who was coming to talk about people that have seen the area. He saw the Kimberley and he also documented it, and his documentaries went worldwide all through the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, Malcolm Douglas. I've seen his stuff when I was small, and you were his neighbor.
Yeah, absolutely. So he was an amazing man, and we actually lived the house right behind his for a couple of years when I was 13, 14, and I spent quite a lot of time in and around the park and talking to him. And I also, I used to go into his media room, and this is sort of mid-90s when I was sort of 12, 13 years old. I'd go into his media room, and he had just all these VHS cassettes in there of all the different adventures he'd been on and all these movies, and I actually just watched everything he had. So one at a time, he'd let me take them home, and I'd go home and I'd put them in and I'd watch, you know, oh, Malcolm goes shark diving on the south coast, or, you know, I'd come back and I'd give that back to him, and then I'd get another one, and I just watched his whole personal library as well as his all his documentaries back then, and just absolutely fascinated by it. But it wasn't until my family, my parents particularly, had a real interest in Kununurra. They always wanted to move there ever since we were kids and just really loved it. I went up there a bunch of times as a kid and really didn't connect with the place because everything for me was about the ocean and about and all of that. So I lived by the tides and the sunsets down there. So to go to Kununurra when I was 21 was when I went there. My family moved up there and left Broome, and just absolutely fell in love with it. And within a week or two, I was just like, I'm going to live here for the rest of my life. This is, it was just a completely different thing. I went wakeboarding on the river and water skiing, and I just fell in love with that river. And it was literally that got me there. And then everything else to sort of do foot expeditions and really fall in love with the bushwalking came years later. Up until then, it was all about the coast.
Did you feel when you arrived in Kununurra and started throughout the years to do bushwalks and experience the nature this way, did you feel a little bit like you are suddenly transported into a Malcolm Douglas documentary yourself? Was that still, do you think, part of why it spoke to you so much and why you identified with it so quickly and so easily?
Absolutely. And a lot of things click then, because exploring in the East Kimberley and all through the Central Kimberley, you can explore and explore and explore. I can go for a walk for a week with my backpack, and all I've got to think about is the moment that I'm in, and I can enjoy everything that's in front of me. So it really just changed my perspective, but also gave me a real understanding of what Malcolm was doing in his earlier films when he was connecting with the desert people.
Als Kind konnte Scotty mit der Gegend um Kununurra also nicht viel anfangen. Kununurra ist, das nur nebenbei bemerkt, eine Stadt im äußersten Nordosten Westaustraliens mit etwas mehr als 4000 Einwohnern. Als er dann jedoch als junger Erwachsener zurückkehrte, änderte sich das schlagartig, wie er uns ja gerade erzählt hat. Mittlerweile ist er seit rund 18 Jahren hier und hat einige Lieblingsorte, an die es ihn immer wieder zurückzieht. Einen hat er gerade schon erwähnt, den Ord River. Ein anderer ist der sogenannte Elephant Rock, eine große Felsformation am Rande der Stadt, die offiziell auch als Carlton Ridge bekannt ist, aber aufgrund ihrer Form und Größe von den Einheimischen sowohl Elephant Rock als auch The Sleeping Buddha genannt wird, weil sie, je nach Richtung, aus der man auf sie schaut, eben genau so aussieht, wie ein schlafender Buddha, beziehungsweise auch wie ein Elefant.
The Elephant Rock is actually opposite my family's property on the Ord River, and you look straight out the kitchen window, straight at this amazing masterpiece. It's one of the most beautiful rocks in the Kimberley. It's definitely one of my favorite places. It's about a 300 meter kayak from the front door across the other side of the river, and then you climb up through the baobab trees and through the rocks right to the very top, where you get a 360 degree view all the way up to Lake Argyle, all the way down the Ord River to Kununurra, which is about 5 kilometers to the north from there.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those places I used to spend a lot of time when I was younger watching the sunset from there. So probably Elephant Rock for me is the world's best sunsets and sunrises happen from up on top of there. So I spend a lot of time up there in those times of the day, but also blessed in the job that I do to be able to take people around to places like that and actually climb up there and have a good look and just sit back and really take in that landscape. It's a grand landscape that we're surrounded by, looking right around the valley. It's all Mirrawong Gadjarong country, that particular area, and the Ord River is a very significant part of the cultural aspect and the life of the Mirrawong people over thousands of years. So you really get a feeling up there. It's very awe-inspiring. It's a total sensory overload. The smell coming from the fresh water and from the trees down below. The air's just crisp and beautiful up there. And Yeah, you're just completely surrounded by water. You've got a big wetland to the east and you've got the river to the west, and it's very special.
Yeah, it sounds very special. And you also hinted at, of course, the natural beauty that you see, but also this a sense of history that I gather from what you say. These old rock formations, but also the knowledge that people have lived there and have lived their culture there for many, many thousands of years.
Absolutely. And one of the main reasons I bring that up, obviously, because we love to acknowledge the traditional owners and it's their land, you know, it's an amazing place.
Es ist ihr Land, sagt Scotty, und das ist es heute und das war es natürlich schon seit vielen, vielen tausend Jahren. Die Spuren dieser Langzeitspanne, seit der die Aboriginal Peoples hier leben, lassen sich an vielen Orten entdecken. Felsmalereien, Schildkröten und andere Bilder, die in den Fels geschnitzt und auf ihn gemalt wurden, Steinwerkzeuge und so weiter und so fort, das alles lässt sich noch heute dort finden, hier im unmittelbaren Umland von Kununurra.
It's so close to town, yeah. You can feel like you're the only person on the planet, and that these people have just walked out of there yesterday. It almost feels like. So it's a really unique experience to enjoy that area and then just to spend time there and just having time of solitude.
Ich bitte Scotty, mir etwas mehr von jenen Menschen zu erzählen, die hier traditionell gelebt haben.
Yeah, so they're the Mirrawong Gadjarong people, and they've lived in that particular area for thousands of years. They still live locally. In and around the town, we're surrounded by communities in Kununurra and all across the Kimberley as well as, yeah, there's hundreds of Aboriginal communities.
Was Scotty ganz besonders am Herzen liegt, sind Möglichkeiten, diese Communities dabei zu unterstützen, ihre Kultur zu bewahren und weiterzugeben.
We've got a language center and an art center and cultural hubs where you can actually go as a local or a guest, a visitor, a tourist, and you can actually come and meet local Mirrawong people. You can see them painting the stories of this land. And you can also go and learn the language, which is very important for us to preserve, is the languages, because unfortunately in Australia we are losing a lot of the indigenous languages as they haven't been recorded over the years. So we've got language centers and initiatives like that now, which actually hanging tightly to those. It's very important as Australians to have that.
Bei allem kulturellen Reichtum und aller Schönheit der Natur verschließt Scotty aber auch nicht die Augen vor den Herausforderungen der Region.
Unfortunately, within the social infrastructure of the Kimberley, there's a lot of horrible things happening up here with kids and with alcoholism and abuse and things like that. So it's one of those bittersweet things. You show people this magnificent grand wilderness, but then underneath there's just these atrocities happening. You know, it's third world living. It's worse than that, you know. So it's something that I really believe that we can make a difference in if, as a collective, we unify and get together and keep chipping away at that. The government really is doing what they can, I believe, and a lot of people will disagree with that, and that's fine, but I think it really needs to come from within, so I'm about that change.
Der Wandel muss also von innen herauskommen, aus den Communities der Gegend. Das stellt Scotty nicht nur fest, sondern er tut auch etwas dafür. So hat er seine eigene Stiftung gegründet, die Kimberley Spirit Foundation, mit der er junge Menschen dazu befähigen möchte, ihr volles Potenzial auszuschöpfen.
It's something that I think for anybody, when you're doing a job you love, for me, I get really bored really quick. I can do a few years of something that I think, I want to do this forever, and then all of a sudden, I'm bored. I need a new adventure. I need something. And for me, I really felt that making enough money to live the lifestyle was one thing, but I also had this extra money that it was being given to me in tips, and I was being paid quite well, and I didn't have any real ambitions. I'm not a businessman like that as such. So anyway, long story short, I started using that money to put back into the area and put back into others and to help others.
Seither spricht Scotty unter anderem in Schulen und hilft jungen Menschen, eigene Businesses zu gründen. Zum Beispiel versucht er, junge Aboriginals aus den Kimberleys zu ermutigen, es ihm gleich zu tun und sich im Tourismus zu versuchen. Auch dann, wenn sie sich das vielleicht erst einmal selbst gar nicht zutrauen. Ihn sagt er, es ist egal, ob du dich bis ins kleinste Detail mit der hiesigen Geologie, Botanik und so weiter auskennst, es kommt auf deine Geschichte an.
And I've also spent the extra time that I've got helping others establish businesses very similar. A lot of younger kids, a lot of other tourism operators, particularly Indigenous operators up there, to really empower them and encourage them to get their businesses going. That people don't care whether you know geology and this stuff inside and out. What they care about is your story, and you can learn that stuff as you go anyway. And you've got a story to tell just by having grown up here. Mm-hmm. You know, take these people out and have a good time.
In your podcast, Bush Yarns, you also talk about some of these issues. For example, you mentioned that there is a pretty high suicide rate in the region. Why is that?
It's generational trauma. It's a trauma that's come through. You've got to remember these, you know, like my wife's grandmother, she was part of the stolen generation. She was taken away, removed from her family.
Also, die Großmutter seiner Frau Taminga, einer Aboriginal, gehörte zu den Stolen Generations. Darüber habe ich ja in der vorherigen Folge schon kurz mit Dale Tilbrook gesprochen.
Some people from that era say that it was a good thing because it rescued them, and other people say it was a bad thing because it brought about this bitterness and a lot of things that took place. Of course, there's good and bad in everything. So there was good things that happened, there was bad things that happened, but there's a lot of trauma from that, and this day and age, there's a lot of alcohol and alcohol abuse, which obviously just masks a lot of issues. And so we've got kids, you know, 9, 10 years old taking their lives regularly, and it's an epidemic, you know, just year after year. And it's been happening since I was a kid, and it's happening probably worse now. And it's sort of stemmed from that generational trauma through to now being, from what I see, is really a problem with the alcohol mm-hmm. and the amount of alcohol that's consumed in the region. And then there's kids on the bottom of that just don't have much hope because of what's happening above them. And they're taking their lives on the scale you could never imagine. It's horrible.
What could be done about that? Are there any specific improvements or changes that you would like to see in the future?
I think fundamentally the most important thing in this is the kids need to be fed, number one. The kids need to be fed. They need somewhere safe where they can sleep and they can call home. And then they need to be taken care of. They need to, you know, to be inspired and mentored and that sort of thing. So it's really targeting those things. There's a million other issues around, but that's at the core of what we're about, is seeing those things take place and giving the kids hope and then helping them find their identity and get through that process so that when they're old enough, they're able to make decisions for themselves that will be fulfilling and hopefully lead them to a happy, healthy life.
Wie wichtig so ein happy, healthy life ist und wie schwer es zu erreichen sein kann, musste Scotty mehrfach in seinem eigenen Umfeld erleben, unter anderem, als sich vor Jahren sein bester Freund das Leben nahm.
There was one particular event, it was a suicide of a friend when we were young, that was very hard to take, but then took me on a journey to understand how that took place over right up until now, more or less. And I'm able to spend time with his children now when I'm in Broome, and his beautiful girl and boy, and give them an understanding. Their father was an amazing man, and I loved him, and we all loved him, us boys just really loved him. But this is what happened, you know, and this is still happening. We don't want to see this happen to you, you know. And so I'm able to share that. And when I say that was the event that really changed me, but there was a whole lot around that.
Im Hinblick auf die sozialen Herausforderungen in der Kimberley-Region ist der Tourismus aus Scottys Sicht eine positive Kraft. Er schafft Arbeitsplätze, bietet Perspektiven, vermittelt den Menschen ein Bewusstsein für und Stolz auf die eigene Kultur und Heimat, insbesondere auch im Vergleich zur lukrativen Bergbauindustrie.
So I'm very pro-tourism. My brother and other friends went off and worked in the mining industry, and I saw them rise and fall, and I saw mine sites open and close and just start communities and shut communities and do all these things. And it was money. It was keeping shareholders happy. It was, you know, all that sort of stuff. Whereas in the tourism, I found it's much better long-term strategy to build these sustainable tourism practices that people could potentially work in their whole life. They can just move to different elements of it and keep it fun, you know. And for me, it's gone from the coast and the boating to the four-wheel driving. Now I'm, you know, moving into aviation side of things, you know, studying pilots and training and wanting to fly some more and then, you know, and just do different elements. There's always something you can do that's completely different to what you're doing last year that can bring a fresh stoke and a fresh interest. And you need to see the Kimberley by air, land and sea. you need to see it from the whole lot. It's not a place that you want to see from just one particular way. So it's important to have all those things covered.
Man soll die Kimberley-Region also bei einem Besuch unbedingt zu Wasser, an Land und aus der Luft erleben. Womit wir wieder bei Scottys Liebe für die Schönheit dieser Gegend wären. Und bei seinen Lieblingsorten. Vorhin hat er uns ja schon vom Elephant Rock erzählt. Jetzt, da sich unser Gespräch dem Ende neigt, besuchen wir einen weiteren, ganz besonderen Ort mit ihm.
And then of course, one that I'll never leave out and one place that is just absolutely changes people when I take them there every time is Pernalulu National Park, which is also known as the Bungle Bungles.
Why and how does that change people?
Everything in the Kimberley is amazing and it's beautiful and it's around water and it's, we get to do all these things. You go to Pernalulu and the landscape is out there, it's World Heritage listed for these cone karst formations that are found out there, and it's a couple hundred thousand hectare park, and it's a landscape that people from France, Italy, over there, I love European guests. People from over there, just in that moment when we're either in a helicopter flying above it or we're walking into the national park, just say, we feel like we're in a National Geographic documentary. Like, this is the moment, and it's the same for everybody. Everything else is beautiful, but that's the place that really just changes the way people look at it and just say, you know, because this place was only first recorded in the 80s, you know, it was only Indigenous people, Gidja people, Jaru people and desert people that knew about this area for all these years. And it was only found by a documentary crew, found as such, by a documentary crew in the early 80s. And it's really only came to be known, you know, to the outside world since then. And yeah, it's just got this big chasm that we explore and this big cathedral, amphitheatre at Gorge, and it's got this banding, this silica and lichen, and this tiger stripe banding that actually is all the way around the place. And it's hard to describe. If you look at a picture, you'd stare at it all day, you know. When people do come there, they only know the picture, the quintessential picture of the Bungle Bungles itself. They don't realize it's so huge and there's so much more to see and do there. So, and I just love the reaction from people. I love the way they come out of there. You know, that's just something that's such a treat for me.
Die Bungle Bungle sind einzigartige Sandsteinfelsen mit an Bienenkörbe erinnernden Kuppen. Also sie sehen wirklich so aus. Schaut euch das gerne mal in der Google-Bildersuche zum Beispiel an. Sie befinden sich im Pornolulu National Park. Und Pornolulu ist wiederum das Wort für Sandstein in der Sprache des örtlichen Aboriginal-Stammes Kia. Ich hoffe, ich spreche es richtig aus. Dem diese Bergkette seit rund 20.000 Jahren bekannt ist. Hier, wie überall in der Kimberley-Region, verändern sich die Farben, ja, die gesamte Anmutung, das Leben selbst gewissermaßen, erheblich, sobald die Regenzeit beginnt.
Probably my favorite thing about the Kimberley is the seasons that they change. We've got a very hot and wet, and at times just feels like it goes forever, wet season. And then we've got a very long dry season. And I love both seasons, you know, depending on what side of the Kimberley you're living in. Growing up in Broome, it was the hot, wet season, sort of by the time you've finished each season you're ready for the next. But the dry season, like now, from now until October, it'll be 30 degrees every day, blue sky and perfect. It'll just be magic. At night you can have a fire, you can lay under the stars on your swag or on just a rug on the ground and go to sleep and not have a care in the world. It's just perfect. And then you get to October and it just, the heat and humidity just kicks in and we go into what we call the build-up or the silly season, and it just can be mid 40 degrees every single day and just absolute pressure cooker, and just doesn't seem to cool down under 30 degrees at nighttime even. It just is so hot. And then our monsoon kicks in and we get this rain, you know, that just fills up all these rivers. And we've got over 109 rivers in the Kimberley. They all fill, they go from being dry or, you know, empty in areas to then connecting up and flowing and all of that. So dry season, we explore spring-fed waterfalls and beautiful oases that you can drink the water of. Wet season, it's really sort of bunker down. We've got cyclones, you know, we can get 5 or 6 cyclones come through. We can get 1,000 mil of rain in a few days in particular areas, which is a yearly rainfall in most parts of Australia within a couple of days in that time of the year. And wow, landscape just changes so dramatically. Yeah, just, I do love the dry season because that's when I do most of my exploring, and that's when it's cool and it's just beautiful and the flowers come out and the birds and everything like that. But then the harshness of the wet season and the fact that people don't come then, that they stay away and you get the place to yourself, is something that we love and something that we need. You know, there's only so much that I can do personally of showing people around before I'm like, all right, I need time. And that generally comes right at the right time. And you've got 6 months to do whatever you like and just have your own adventures and your own space, which is, yeah, they're both wonderful seasons and they both need to be experienced. And it's all part of a bigger picture to come and see it all and really, really enjoy God's masterpiece. There's nowhere like it.
Last question. We talked a lot about the landscape and the beauty of that. How about the animal world? Of course, there are cliches like snakes and crocodiles and all of that. What can we experience in Kimberley in terms of animal kingdom?
I was just thinking about it a minute ago because it's unusual to have such a long conversation and not talk about that. And so crocodiles is number one, you know, saltwater crocodiles. We've got a very healthy population of saltwater crocodiles from one end of the Kimberley to the other. And they're an estuarine crocodile, so they're found all throughout the coast. They do come up in various rivers, but they're primarily on the coast. And then we've got our freshwater crocodile, which inhabits all the interior and all the freshwater areas. And they're beautiful. And they're both the most amazing animal. You've really got to experience, you know, them living in their natural habitat and see that firsthand just to really understand the animal and how amazing they are. And then we've got a lot of snakes. We've got a lot of different types of snakes. We've got a lot of deadly snakes. We've got a lot of things that can kill you.
There's no denying that.
Yeah. Yeah. And having said that, you know, with the animals, you know, we've got wallabies and we've got amazing birds, just birds that come from all over the world. Siberia birds that come to Roebuck Bay every year, you know, and do these big migrations and you see these birds and you know, all our shorebirds and a lot of beautiful birds and all of that. But of course, for anyone coming from overseas, you know, I know when I was in Berlin, I didn't see many birds. I didn't get to see many stars. And, you know, I was there in the winter. I was over there for a month traveling through Europe with Tourism Australia, and I didn't see a lot. So when you get home and you see the stars at night and it's just, you know, absolutely uninterrupted, you've just got a sheet of stars above you and then you've got the birds first thing in the morning, you really get used to those things. So, yeah, the wildlife is really unreal. And you hear them, you see them. Yeah, it's important to have a local guide. Absolutely. You know, myself, other local guides, whether it be, you know, young Indigenous guides, whether it be other guides that come for the larger companies that operate in the region, it is important to know and understand the area so that you are wearing boots where you need to be wearing boots. You are not swimming where you shouldn't be swimming. There is a lot of swimming and a lot of beautiful places to experience, but if you don't know where and how, it would make a nervous trip, because when the tourists are talking amongst themselves, you just hear some really interesting things. But when you're with a local guide, you know you're safe. And if you understand snakes and you understand crocodiles, you can have a respect for them and an intrigue with them without really having to worry about the harmful side of it, because you need to be, you're appropriately equipped for the situation.
Ich fühle mich jetzt auch angemessen ausgestattet für einen Besuch der Kimberley-Region, zumindest gedanklich. Und dafür danke, Scotty. Und ich hoffe natürlich, mich dort in nicht allzu ferner Zukunft dann auch endlich mal selbst vor Ort umschauen zu können. Jetzt begeben wir uns gen Süden mit seinem mediterranen Klima, das perfekte Bedingungen bietet für Wälder aus majestätisch hohen Bäumen und eine atemberaubende Biodiversität. Von dieser Gegend erzählt uns Gene Hardy. Wer ihn mit seiner Mähne aus wallenden blonden Locken, seinem breiten Grinsen und den vor Enthusiasmus wirklich blitzenden Augen sieht, hat sofort den Eindruck, ein leidenschaftliches Energiebündel vor sich zu haben und insgesamt ein Menschen, der mit seinem Leben mehr als zufrieden ist. In der Tat bezeichnet er sich auf seiner Webseite als einen der luckiest man alive. Das ist natürlich großartig, wenn man sich und sein Leben so wahrnimmt, würde ich sagen. Und auf die Frage, warum er sich denn so lucky findet, kommt er schnell auf den Ort zu sprechen, an dem er lebt.
A couple of reasons. Firstly, just getting to kind of live in the beautiful Margaret River, like in West Australia. It's such a gorgeous place and there's so many cool natural attractions and so many things to do that are kind of, I guess, free and, you know, like surfing and hiking and fishing and diving, all these incredible pursuits that give you so much joy. Mm-hmm. So that living here and getting to do that is incredible, but also that my vocation is made up of those things and showing other people this place and getting to explore it with them is such a privilege. And now I spend a lot of time with my children out. They're kind of quite professionally surfing, so I spend a lot of time at the beach. And I've just been out there this morning, and yesterday I was guiding and hiked 20 Ks on the most incredible bit of coastline. So, yeah, it's like pinch me, you know. It's is this a dream?
This is a dream, das sagt Gene also. Und zwar, weil er nicht nur an einem wunderschönen Ort lebt, sondern sogar auch dort arbeitet. Er ist der Eigentümer und Geschäftsführer von Cape to Cape Explorer Tours, einem preisgekrönten Ökotourismusunternehmen, das sich auf authentische, umweltbewusste Erlebnisse auf Westaustraliens besten Mehrtageswanderwegen spezialisiert hat. Bevor er dieses Reiseunternehmen gründete, reiste und arbeitete er weltweit als Journalist für verschiedene Sportpublikationen. Er entwickelte zudem Umweltprogramme in Australien und Großbritannien und arbeitete für eine Reihe von Naturschutzbehörden und Nichtregierungsorganisationen im Südwesten Australiens. You mentioned Margaret River. Is that the region that you also grew up in?
Yeah, I was born in Margaret River, so in like the hospital here, in the old hospital in this little wooden room, and in 1976.
Die Margaret River Region liegt im Südwesten Australiens, im Tal des namensgebenden Margaret River, 277 Kilometer südlich von Perth, der Hauptstadt Westaustraliens. Es ist wohl die einzige Gegend des Landes, in der man innerhalb kürzester Zeit von preisgekrönten Weingütern zu Stränden mit Weltklasse-Surfbedingungen und zu hoch aufragenden Kerry-Wäldern gelangen kann.
And the Margaret River region, it's like it sticks out from the rest of Western Australia. So it's out, like it's got two capes, Cape Naturalist to North Cape Leeuwin at the south. It's 125 kilometres between the two capes. And those capes stick out about 100 kilometres from the rest of West Australia. So it's almost like an island. Mm. It looks different to the rest of West Australia. The way that it's positioned makes the climate really mild and just super livable, that it's surrounded by water. On three sides, again, it's like an island, and it's just completely different to the rest of West Australia.
Also, um das nochmal zusammenzufassen, Margaret River befindet sich genau in der Mitte zwischen zwei Capes, also zwischen zwei Landzungen, die 125 Kilometer voneinander entfernt sind und 100 Kilometer von der sonstigen westaustralischen Küste herausragen. Und dadurch sind sie zu drei Seiten vom Ozean umrandet. Und diese zwei Capes, diese zwei Landzungen sind Cape Leeuwin und Cape Naturalist. Hier aufzuwachsen ermöglichte Gene eine Kindheit voller Freiheit und Unabhängigkeit.
I just love getting out in nature. And we grew up on about 7 kind of acres, right down near the river of my river. And I just spent heaps of my time down on the river, kind of chasing fish and tadpoles and whatever I could kind of, you know, just be out there and by myself. And yeah, it's just such a magic kind of spot to grow up and be immersed in that, you know? Mm. Yeah.
Do you think you would have turned out significantly different if you had grown up somewhere else, like in a big city, for example?
Yeah, 100%. It's completely shaped who I am. Just having that experience of kind of the coast and the forest as my backyard. Mm. It's just so calming and it really shaped my life, I guess, for sure.
Die Küste hat also sein Leben geprägt und geformt. Nicht nur seine Freizeit, er wandert, angelt, taucht und surft in jeder freien Minute, sondern, wie schon erwähnt, auch seine Arbeit, mehr dazu gleich. Seine ganze Familie lebt für die und mit der Natur. So oft wie möglich sind sie unter freiem Himmel, wandernd, schwimmend und vor allem surfend. Und seine Tochter ist sogar eine professionelle Surferin. Und es fällt mir nicht schwer, zumindest ein paar Gemeinsamkeiten zu entdecken. Yeah, I'm a passionate hiker and I just started surfing here in Los Angeles.
Oh, there you go.
So I'm an absolute beginner. I don't have a clue, but I'm trying. What does surfing mean to you?
It's really interesting. Like it has changed. Uh-huh. It's totally changed. You know, when I was a teen and adolescent, it was a little bit of a kind of a proving ground. It was a place where teenage boy could get rid of their energy and prove, you know, something. That was, you know, when you're growing up as a kid. And as well as escaping and the incredible excitement and the kind of safe risk taking. Mm-hmm. And then now it's moved more into a little bit, I guess, of just immersion in nature. There's like-minded people. It's physical. And there's all these other things apart from even the surfing that's such a joy. I guess it's like golf, you know, the joy of golf is you're out in nature and you're walking and getting the exercise. Well, surfing's the same. You're out in the ocean, you're getting exercise, there's wonderful people. And of course, you never feel good enough when you're surfing. Like I've surfed for 30 years. I put a lot of time into it. And like this morning, I feel like there was a couple of things with a simple maneuver, like a bottom turn that I've learned that mean that I just did a couple of turns I've never done before. You know, and that's incredibly exciting. You never feel good enough. And so you're always in pursuit with the actual surfing and there's all these things around it. So it's kind of, it is addictive, but it's incredibly enjoyable, you know?
Well, I can confirm the part about never feeling good enough. I definitely don't feel good enough with reason. So if I'm really lucky and really good, I'm able to stand for a few seconds. Otherwise, I'm mainly on my belly. But already, nevertheless, I identify very much with something that you wrote a while ago, a few years ago, in fact, for Move for Mental Health. In it, you wrote a short quote. You wrote, "Surfing is not just an escape. It is like all physical activity, an answer. It allows the subconscious mind to unwind, relax, and come up with fresh and creative solutions." Yeah, unquote. And that's really how I feel. And I feel it's so different from, for example, hiking, where you, of course, also can let your mind wander. But to me, even on my very low level, it's so much more immersive than almost anything that I can remember ever doing.
It really is. It's so all-encompassing, hey? Like, and especially when it's really good. I think in this world, there's no such thing as perfection, you know, except in the surf. Like, you see waves and you go, oh, my gosh, that is perfect. That, look at that. And I just get this froth level, even as a, you know, I'm 45 now and we were on the Gold Coast last week and there was this cyclone swell and there were these waves running down this sandbank for 2 kilometres. 2 kilometres you could ride it for. And some of these waves just blew my mind. I feel kind of like 12 again. Like, you know, I'm just jumping out of my skin. Yeah. And anything else you've got going on at that point in your life is completely irrelevant, right? Like, it just doesn't matter. And it, you know, I've had moments actually. It's so funny when the corona hit and the whole tourism world was imploding and we had hundreds of clients cancelling and wanting refunds. I was actually over in the Gold Coast and there was a cyclone swell just similar to last week and I was biding my time. I was doing like 2 or 3 hours of paying back all these tens of thousands of dollars an hour in refunds and horrible phone calls. Okay, that's enough. Put the phone down, pack up for the day and just go out surfing for 3 hours in the most incredible ways. And I'm coming going, well, that was incredible. Like, all right, I can deal with some more of these phone calls. I can deal with losing all this money. Do that again. And I was just doing this cycle of like, and it made it fun.
Well, yeah, sounds like a very effective short-term therapy for sure.
Yeah.
But I also really like what you mentioned about even when you are not in the water, just being at the coast, like looking at the waves and reading them and getting excited if you see a good one.
Yeah.
I already feel the same. And it's really interesting because, for example, from hiking, I know because I also tend to do quite a few long distance hikes where you carry all your equipment and your tent. And eventually during the evening, at some point, you will have to find a place in the wild to pitch your tent. And maybe you know that, but already at lunchtime, I start, even without intending to scan the landscape. And every time I walk past a campsite that would be good, I'm like, wow, this could be a great spot. And this could be, I don't even intend to camp there because it's much too early. But you just get this sense, this interest in reading the landscape and imagining staying in this place. And I already now have kind of a similar sensation with regard to waves, which for me is very new. Whenever I'm at the ocean here in LA and I see a long, long breaking wave, I'm like, wow, that would be amazing. It just gives you a whole new perspective on looking at the ocean, even just looking at it.
Well, there's a term for it. It's called mind surfing.
Ah, okay.
So like I'm a professional mind surfer, you know. Sit there, oh my gosh, did this and that, and you can feel it and sense it. And it's a real thing, especially like because I've done a lot of coaching with my daughter and she's doing kind of professional surfing. So I watch a lot of waves, right? And you're scanning and picking up and also like the lineup's constantly evolving and changing with the tides and, you know, oh my gosh, he's got a heat in 2 hours time. The tide's going down. What's this going to do to that bank? Is the waves going to, cause a lot of surf competing is just finding the waves. It's a huge component of it. And so you've got to try and forecast what's going to happen in 2 hours time. Is the wind going to change? Is this going to change? What board's going to be better? Where am I going to sit? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's almost a professional thing to be going, oh my gosh, what's happening with these conditions? It's really interesting. Keeps it exciting.
Absolutely, yeah. So you love surfing, you love Margaret River, the region, but even though you absolutely love that part of the world, it doesn't mean that you never left it, does it?
No.
When in the world have you lived and traveled and why? Can you give us an overview?
Yeah, so when I was quite young, the first major travel I did was actually driving around Australia. Hmm. I felt like I wanted to see my home before I went abroad. So I spent a year traveling in a van around Australia. That was really cool. It was actually halfway through uni. So I took a year off and just did this whole year traveling, which is...
I did almost the same thing after school. I also went to Australia for a year, just drove around it. It was amazing.
Oh, how good is it?
It was amazing. I just unfortunately didn't get into surfing back then, but well, better late than
ever. You have to come back. There you go. You have to come back.
I will.
And then when I finished uni, I was really lucky. Like, I met my wife who's from England and we traveled back there and lived there. And from that was kind of our base. So then, you know, we bought a van and we drove from England down to Morocco and back. And then the following year, we kind of traveled over to to Ireland and then down through Spain. And then we actually flew to South America. Hmm. So we did quite a lot of time kind of in South America and Easter Island. And spent probably 4 months there and did like the Inca Trail and did a real lot of surfing. It was a fantastic time. Yeah, so that was kind of our main traveling period, probably 3 years, you know.
After all this travel, what made you eventually return to Margaret River?
I reckon my mind was always in Margaret River. I kind of always knew that I'd come back here. My roots were really deep because of that childhood and my family and everything. Mm. It was interesting. Like, I got offered quite a good job offer in England, and I didn't have much to go back to in Margaret River, but I kind of thought there's a lot of opportunity there. So I had to weigh the two up right before starting a family. And we kind of decided, let's go back to Margs just because there is opportunity there.
Das ist natürlich mutig. Der Plan, eine Familie zu gründen, ein gutes Angebot in England, keine konkrete Perspektive daheim in Australien und dann trotzdem zu entscheiden, das konkrete Angebot in den Wind zu schlagen und stattdessen in die Heimat zurückzukehren. When you said you basically declined this promising, exciting offer in England to go back to Margaret River because you saw some opportunities, what kind of opportunities are you talking about?
Lifestyle, mate. All lifestyle opportunities. Mm. Lots of surf and hiking, and it's such a great place. And the climate's so good, you know. The climate's amazing, and it was really like lowly populated there. Still is.
Was that always kind of your priority when making big life decisions? Lifestyle.
Yeah, I reckon
prioritizing it higher than basically career.
Yeah. It was actually like. I did do some, you know, I went to university and I did a degree in communications and business first. And I kind of thought, oh, you know, I'm going to end up in an office in Perth. I did think that.
Yeah.
But I did like 3 weeks work experience and I just was like, oh my God, this is like death, you know, sitting in an office in a city for me anyway.
Yeah.
And probably from then I never really did it again. I just prioritized lifestyle.
And when and how did it become clear to you that you wanted to do something with and in Margaret River professionally, that you did not only want to live there, but really make it the essence of your work as well?
I think it's interesting, like even when I was traveling, like we were actually coming back, we were kind of going to Europe for 8 months and then coming back. And when I came back, I was working for national parks. So one point I was kind of managing a surf shop and working national parks and running the national parks events and interpretation program. So taking tourists out into the national park and showing them why the national park's so important and the different things you can see. So I did already have a base here. Mm-hmm. And then I did the Diploma of Education and I actually worked for a different non-government organizations doing land care and coastal rehabilitation and protection work. Mm-hmm. So I was already starting to work in these really enjoyable fields that I felt was so in my kind of zone of what I had to give.
I mean, it takes a lot of courage and probably also like a vision to from doing that, becoming being an employee to decide, okay, I will start something myself and I believe in myself and in this region and in my idea of how to present it enough that I basically, trust myself to turn it into a professional and profitable operation.
You know, you hear stories of people who, like, you know, they sell everything, including the kitchen sink, and they take this massive risk and put it all on the line, right?
Hmm.
That wasn't me. That wasn't the way we kind of did it. Really, it started tiny.
Ein Kumpel von Gene arbeitete in einem Resort und wurde von seinen Gästen immer mal wieder nach Ausflugsmöglichkeiten gefragt. Eines Tages dachte sich dieser Kumpel, Moment mal, Gene arbeitet doch für die und in den Nationalparks. Der kennt sich doch aus. Soll er sich doch mal was für meine Gäste überlegen. Er fragte bei Gene also an und der konzipierte eine kleine dreistündige Nachmittagstour, die ziemlich gut lief. Von diesem Punkt an baute er sein Business langsam auf. Er gewann einige größere Kunden, die ihn dann wiederum weiterempfahlen. Die ersten $1,000, die er auf diese Weise verdiente, investierte er in ein Logo und in eine Website.
And all the time I was still working.
Hmm.
So I was working, doing a job I loved actually, but also building something else. Because I always knew that I wanted to have my own business and I knew that the freedom that would afford. And it took about 4 years of building to get to the point where I was like, oh my gosh, I just can't run this business, which is exploding, like with growth, and work as well. Yeah. Like I've got to give something up.
Gene nahm sich ein unbezahltes Jahr Auszeit von seinem Job und fokussierte sich stärker auf sein eigenes junges Business, das dadurch nur umso schneller wuchs. Er reinvestierte die Einnahmen in ein Büro, Fahrzeuge, Mitarbeiter und es wurde dann rasch klar, dass er nicht mehr zu seinem früheren Job zurückkehren würde. But in the trailer video on your website, you also hint at the fact that even though you build it gradually, it was still really tough at times. And sometimes you almost didn't make it, basically.
Totally. Like, there was the toughness was in the grind of that. Like, I'd be working full time, like I was maybe 4 days a week with the NGO stuff. And then I moved to youth development. And it was pretty intense job. And then I'd get off work, I'd have some dinner, and I'd literally work till 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, doing all the emails and admin that I had to do. And then I'd sleep for 4 hours, get up, drive the hour to work and work all day and do this again and again. And so I didn't have a whole lot to give to the family. And then there was struggles with kind of partners and stuff and explosive growth. And just sometimes, like even now with like coronavirus, I'm probably a third of my staff right now are in quarantine.
Mm.
It's always the same. You've always just got enough staff to survive. And if you've got too many staff, then you're probably going to go broke, you know? So it's this whole economic balance, I guess. Yeah.
It sounds really challenging today, but also in the early days. It reminds me a little bit of my life when I started my podcast and everything, which I also did for the first few years next to a full-time job. And in terms of the hours that you described, I can feel that. What gave you the energy and the strength of will to push through with that in these days and to be willing to day after day work until 2 a.m. at night, knowing that you have to go back to your day job in the morning?
I think it was the vision that and the faith that it was growing and it would get to a point where I could have my freedom in a way. I think I could see where it was going. I had really good staff and to continue to have amazing staff. And I just felt like I really wanted that freedom. Like I didn't want to be sitting working for, you know, a huge organization or a government organization 40 or 50 hours a week. You know, that just wasn't what I had in mind for the majority of my life. And that if I worked really hard and set something up, then it could offer me everything I wanted, which is kind of what happened.
So hat Gene also sein Unternehmen gegründet und weiterentwickelt. Dessen Name, ich habe es vorhin schon mal kurz erwähnt, Cape to Cape Explorer Tours. Und diese zwei Capes im Namen, die beziehen sich auf die beiden Landzungen, die wir vorhin auch schon erwähnt haben, Cape Leeuwin und Cape Naturalist. Zwischen ihnen, von einem zum anderen, verläuft ein atemberaubend schöner Wanderweg, der Cape to Cape Track. Über 123 Kilometer hinweg führt er mitten durch den Leeuwin Naturalist National Park und damit durch spektakuläre Küsten- und Waldlandschaften, durch eine faszinierende Geologie mit Felsformationen voller Klippen und Höhlen, sowie auch durch eine sich ständig verändernde Vegetation voller Wildblumen, je nach Jahreszeit, und jeweils dicht vorbei an Stränden und Weinbergen. Als Gene sein Unternehmen vor rund 12 Jahren gründete, tat er das mit dem Ziel, der Spezialist für alle touristischen Dienstleistungen rund um diesen Trail zu werden. Probably that's really difficult to answer because I'm sure you did the trail many times, but would you be able to say what some of your favorite special memories of that trail are? Are there any special magic moments and encounters that stick out?
There's like every time you get out there, there's something special. And like yesterday was a really good example. I didn't even know I was going to be guiding until the evening before when somebody kind of got sick. And then the day, like yesterday was such a beautiful, brilliant blue day. The first 7 kilometers were just hiking through the forest, and we had a fire kind of two or three months ago. Mm-hmm. So the forest was a lot of it. Some of it was not burnt at all and some was regenerating, and it just looked amazing, you know? So that was really good. And we had the big cockatoos go over and there was kangaroos. And then we had 7 kilometers on the beach and it was just the most stunning day. And as I was walking past, a guy caught a salmon on a fly rod, which is hard to do. And so I was there when he caught the salmon and he let that go, and the group was, you know, that was pretty amazing. Then I had a coffee at Hamlin Bay where you walk into and watch the stingrays and just sat there thinking about how great life is. We had an hour in the sun for lunch and then finished off the day with this incredible kind of walk. We got past this lighthouse. It's all these hills and really rugged. And, you know, it's a really special day. And I think every day out there is special. Some of my favorite days when it's raining and lightning and feel really alive, or there's days like yesterday, which is the polar opposite of that. It's sunny and it's beautiful. So it's hard to say, well, this is the one special day, because honestly, we get all these amazing clients and everyone's got a story and everyone's from somewhere. And I love hearing about where other people are from and then sharing the knowledge. And each day has a different theme. So yesterday the group was up to day 6 and it was all about the history of Europeans in our land. And just like the day is broken into 3 sections, I break the interp into 3 sections. So the first section was about the Dutch. You know, they first saw Cape Leeuwen in 1611 and they were just going past trading. And then the French came interested in settling West Australia with Bourdain and in Napoleon's time. And that's a fascinating story. And then finally the English actually came and settled, and all the trials and tribulations of that settlement. So that's the day molds around these classic stories, you know. It's a beautiful day yesterday.
Also, erst kamen die niederländischen Händler hierher, um 1611 war das, und dann folgten mit dem Seefahrer und Expeditionsleiter Nicolas Baudin im Auftrag Napoleons die Franzosen. Und schließlich kamen dann und blieben dann die Briten. Jean liebt es, seinen Gästen Geschichten aus der Vergangenheit dieser Gegend zu erzählen und damit ihr Verständnis für das zu schärfen, was sie sehen und erleben.
Probably my favorite day and my favorite stories are around the geology.
Yeah.
You know, I said before that actually the Cape to Cape was a part of India that got stuck onto Australia, and then when India collided, when all of the continents formed Gondwana. And, one of my co-workers, Saul, he came up with this love story around how Australia and India had this like love affair. And the Cape to Cape is the love child that was created when they had this hookup. And then eventually India was a home wrecker and left, and she's gone and hooked up with China and is creating the Himalayas now. And we turn it all into this story. And whilst I'm telling the story, I actually map it all in sand. So I have the continent. So it takes something that's quite abstract and makes it tactile, and people can see it and they can feel it. And because it's got this love story and everyone knows how it feels to be left and, you know, about an illicit affair, it brings something really quite cold and hard, like rock, to life. Yeah. And by sand mapping it, we bring this magic to that story. And that's probably my favorite story to tell in that.
Ich muss sagen, ich kann es kaum erwarten, endlich wieder nach Westaustralien zurückzukehren. Jana ist ja, ich habe es schon mal erzählt, dieser Tage schon dort. Es sei ihr gegönnt. Hoffentlich schaffe ich es auch bald mal wieder, nach dieser langen Zeit des landesweiten Lockdowns dort. Die Gespräche mit Jean, Scotty und auch Dale in der vorherigen Folge haben mir jedenfalls nur umso mehr Lust gemacht. Zum Abschluss habe ich sie gebeten, nochmal ein kleines Plädoyer für ihre jeweilige Heimatregion abzugeben. Los geht's mit Jean Hardy. If someone would think about where in Australia to go for a holiday and maybe considers Margaret River and this whole region, what would you tell him or her about why and how that region should be considered?
Well, I think if someone's from Europe and coming to Australia, I can just say that every bit of it's got something different and something of appeal. And there's so many different, like, there's so many, you know it because you've driven around, there's so many different zones. I think what Margaret River's got that possibly I don't think anywhere else can rival is the diversity. There's out on this peninsula that is this Margaret River region, the incredible forest, there's vineyards, there's amazing fishing, there's surfing. I mean, it's all natural base, but the diversity of things you can do within like a, you know, a 50-kilometre drive is unrivaled, in my opinion. And that combines with that incredible Mediterranean climate. So you come in summer, you know you're going to get, you know, 10 days out of 10 days are going to be hot, sunny days. Like, nowhere else has got that Mediterranean climate, like, to that extent, you know? The water's really warm. It really is just such a livable, beautiful place to kind of visit. And that, I think that's what Margaret River's got. And that's what people say. They just didn't expect the diversity.
Scotty Cornell sagt über die Kimberley-Region:
The Kimberley is the last frontier. It's the last part of Australia. It's the most northwestern tip. It's just a world away from what the rest of the country in. I learnt off a fella who runs the Tourism Western Australia in Germany years ago. I learnt off him that the people come to Australia, they go to Sydney Harbour Bridge and they go to the Great Barrier Reef, and then they come back and they do Uluru and Kakadu, and then the Kimberley is third on their list. And I often hear, and I know from experience, that those things are wonderful things to come and experience, but when they get to the Kimberley and they come and explore it, they say, this is what we thought Australia was. This is, it's taken us three trips now, but now we've found it. This is what we came to experience, you know, and this culture and this isolation and this grand landscape and all of that. So the Kimberley is the Australia that people want to come and experience, but they just don't know until they've done these other things that that's what's sitting there.
Und Dale Tilbrook aus der vorherigen Folge meint zur Frage, warum wir das Swan Valley besuchen sollten.
Okay, well, it's because it has such a multicultural feel to it, because it has a deep Aboriginal history, and then on top of that, the layers of European history that came. So I mentioned before table grapes and wine grapes. We grow all sorts of other produce here. It's got the Swan River flowing right through the middle of it. Wherever you go, where there's a beautiful river, there's always what I call the blue sky places, the places where you go and enjoy nature. But just as equally, you can go to a winery and enjoy nice wine, find a place to enjoy beautiful food using local produce, come and visit a business like mine where you can connect with local culture. So you're going to have layers of different things to experience when you come to the Swan Valley.
Layers of different things to experience hatten wir, denke ich, auch in dieser Doppelfolge zu Westaustralien. Ich danke noch einmal Tourism Western Australia für die Unterstützung und natürlich den Gesprächspartnerinnen und Gesprächspartnern dieser Folgen, angefangen mit Scotty Cornell. Scotty, I thank you so much for the generous time you have made for us today. You already told me in the beginning of our conversation that you just witnessed a beautiful sunrise before and you can't wait to get out into nature and really experience it again today. So sorry for keeping you and preventing you from doing that for so long. And thanks for your patience.
Nah, they're things I love talking about. So thanks very much for having me on. And yeah, I love sharing this passion of mine with people. So yeah, and I can't wait to get outside, so I'll definitely do that now. But thanks so much for having me on, Eric. It's been a pleasure.
Great, thank you. Bye bye.
Catch ya.
Danke auch an Gene Hardy.
Oh, thanks so much. Beautiful, no worries. Bye.
Und Dale Tilbrook.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Bye.
Und natürlich, wie immer, vielen Dank auch an euch fürs Zuhören. Bis zum nächsten Mal. Macht es gut. Euer Eric.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.